Many, many years ago, when I first decided that I was going to be a priest, I entered into the seminary. And when I entered into the seminary, I had the highest expectations of what I would find there. I'd just gotten finished 4 years of college, now 4 years of living in the fraternity house in college. And I was so weary, let's just say, of the absence of any moral compass, the absolute lack of any value. I was so weary of that, that I just heaved this sigh of relief when I finally entered into the seminary, and I said to myself, now at last, I'm going to be among people who are all of one mind and one heart. Everybody here is trying to be holy. Everybody here is trying to follow Christ. Everybody here is trying to do the right thing. At last, a place where everybody's of one mind and one heart. And my little illusion was shattered within 24 hours of arriving in the seminary. Because let me tell you, it was a school filled with guys with precious little in common. Some were very old, some were very young. Oldest guy in the seminary was 70 years old, studying to be a priest. The youngest guy in the seminary, well, I don't really know how young he was, but he looked like he was about 12. Have you ever seen Gerber baby food? He looked like the Gerber baby in a Roman collar. Okay. From every imaginable background, one had been a banker, one had been a bartender. One had done deals on Wall Street, the other had just been discharged from the United States Marine Corps. One had been a dentist, one had been a professional musician. And of every kind of personality you can imagine, some guys were very rich, one guy drove a Maserati. The rest of us were so poor we could barely afford a bus ticket. Some guys were very sociable and gregarious, others were painfully shy, some were remarkably intelligent, while others, well, let's just say their talents lie in other areas, okay? And for some crazy reason, we were all convinced that God was calling us to be priests. Apart from that, precious little in common, which is why, whenever I hear the gospel of Jesus calling his 12 apostles, I'm not the slightest bit surprised at how vastly different these 12 were. On one hand, you've got impulsive St. Peter, and on the other, thoughtful Bartholomew. Then there's lofty St. John, practical St. James, my favorite combination of all. Simon the Zealot party member whose entire mission in life was to overthrow the Roman government, together with Matthew, the tax collector for the Roman government. Right? You talk about a spark and powder keg. All of them called, precious little in common, except for the fact that Christ called them all. Could Christ have called holier men? Without any doubt whatsoever. Could Christ have called more talented men? No doubt whatsoever. These guys were none of the most talented guys in the world, fishermen picked off the shore of the Sea of Galilee. Compares favorably, you know, with picking guys off a truck stop off a highway. Really, it does. Christ could have done a better job if he didn't pick anybody at all. He could have done a better job of doing the entire thing himself. But God, in his wisdom and his providence, had a vision that we don't entirely understand. And he called. But here's the message today. They cooperated with God's call. And that made all the difference. And I have a message for you this morning. It's this. God is calling you. Right where you are. Exactly as you are. And you want to know what God's calling you to? I can say this with absolute confidence. All of us here have at least one thing in common when we say that God is calling us. First of all, he's calling you to get your soul to heaven. And secondly, to bring as many people along with you as you possibly can. First of all, get your soul to heaven. To make a long story short, that means stop being so gosh darn selfish, right? Love is what's left when I take your soul and I drain all the selfishness out of it. What's left is how much you love Heaven is a place of perfect love, and we're all trying to get ready. But not just to get your soul into heaven. But God is calling you to bring everybody you know, to bring as many people as you possibly can. That's your vocation. You've heard the word vocation before? It comes from the Latin word vocare, which means to call. Who's the call from? God. Who's the call to? You. What's the call about? Get to heaven. Bring as many people along with you as you possibly can. And in this call, you only need to cooperate. Now, I could give you lots of different homilies on what it means to cooperate. I could talk to you about the importance of prayer. I could say, don't tell me you don't have time to pray. It's a question of priorities. People say, I don't have time. What they're really saying is, it's not important enough for me to make time. So make time. Could give you a whole homily just on that. Could give you a homily on the importance of going to Mass, not just every once in a while, but every Sunday. People say, I don't have time, I got to go to soccer. Listen, Mass is your excuse for missing everything else. Go back to the soccer team and say, I don't have time for the game, I had to go to Mass. Put it first, seriously, I'd give you a whole homily on that. I could give you a homily on the importance of getting to confession. Don't live your life carrying around a whole lot of serious sin. Just get to confession. It's not that bad. But instead, I want to give you a homily today on the most important single thing missing from people's lives by which they are not cooperating with God. You ready for this? People refuse to prayerfully accept God's permissive will. It's the most important single thing missing from all our spiritual lives. It needs explanation. God's permissive will needs to be contrasted with God's active will. God actively wills things like you forgive your neighbor, you love your enemies, you don't bear false witness against your neighbors, all the commandments. These are things God actively wills. But then there's this mysterious thing called God's permissive will. And what it means is that God is giving you freedom. In spite of the fact he tells you to give you commandments, he's also giving you freedom. And when you misuse that freedom and commit a sin, it causes suffering for yourself and for others. And you want to know what? God could, if he wanted, intervene and stop the disorder that's a consequence of sin. But for some mysterious reason, he doesn't. This is God's permissive will. And I got to tell you, I don't understand it, but I can help you understand it. The greatest example of God's permissive will in all of human history was Calvary. God never willed an act of violence against anybody, much less against the second person of the Blessed Trinity. And Jesus himself said, if I wanted, I could call up a legion of angels right now to deliver me. But he didn't. And do you see why? It's because he brings about an even greater good as a consequence. Now, there's all kinds of bad and evil things are happening in the world. They're happening in the church. They're happening in your place of work. They're happening in your family. I'm not saying that they're good. And I'm not saying you should just lay back and passively just let them all happen. No, you do the good you're able to do in this world. You change what you're able to change. But when you can't, what I ask you to do is prayerfully accept God's permissive will. If you do, two things happen. Number one, tremendous peace for yourself. Number two, you actually do more good than you can imagine. Let me explain. I knew a priest once who was friends with a religious sister. Her name was Sister Mary Lucy. She was a poor Clare nun. And she was dying, slowly dying, of a degenerative bone disease, and the doctors couldn't do anything to save her. All they could do was treat her pain. Her spine was collapsing, slowly collapsing. And one of the consequences was she went completely blind. Well, this priest would go and visit Sister Mary Lucy. And not out of compassion, not because he was some kind of visiting angel, he went to visit Sister Mary Lucy because going to see her was like going on retreat. She was the holiest soul he'd ever met. She would light up a room with her smile. Never complained about a thing. Joyful at all times. And he would go, just maybe some of that would rub off on him. And he'd go to talk to her sister Mary Luce, and he would say, "Sister, are you angry with God?" And she would say, "Why would I be angry with God?" "Well, terminal illness, sudden blindness, you know, are you angry with God?" She said, "Oh, no. I give thanks to God for my blindness. Because of my blindness, I have had experiences I never would have had if I could have seen. And he says, "Well, you know, are you sad or are you depressed?" She goes, "Oh, no. Listen, I'm happier than I've ever been in my entire life. I'm closer to Christ than I've ever been in my entire life. And that makes me very happy indeed." When she died, the priest said, "You know, Sister Mary Lucy shot to heaven like she was being launched off a catapult." And I think about Sister Mary Lucy a lot. Because here's a woman, terminally ill and blind, and she's the happiest person in the whole room, right? Happiest person you'll ever meet. And then there's us, who get bent out of shape, bent into like pretzels, because of trifles. And what's the difference? What's the difference? Can you prayerfully, trustingly accept that even if you don't know what's going on, God does? Tremendous peace as a consequence. Missing peace from people's spiritual lives. But more than that, you can do a great deal of good for others. Let me explain. Our patroness, St. Therese, once said, "My whole strength lies in prayer and sacrifice. These are my invincible arms. They can move hearts far better than words. I know it by experience." And that's because your sacrifices, hardships, things that happen to you in your life, troubles in the world, troubles in your family, troubles in the church, you can unite those to Christ on the cross. And when you do, I can't explain this, but you do a tremendous amount of good because of something called the priesthood of the baptized. I'm not sure if you've heard of this before, but let me explain. I'm standing up here before you this morning, and everybody knows I'm the priest, and the priest says the Mass on Sunday. That's what priests do. And everybody thinks that's all the priest is. We fail to recognize that the idea of priesthood is far more ancient and far more universal than you've ever known. Any religion, anywhere, any culture, any time in history, if they've believed in God, gods, or anything like God, they've always had a priest of some sort. Because the definite, here's a 2-second catechism on the priesthood. A priest is someone who brings about a union between God and man by means of sacrifice. That's what a priest is. By means of sacrifice, brings God and man together. Now, how many priests are there in the world? How many priests? If you look it up, you'll find that there's about 400,000 Catholic priests in the world, about 5,000 bishops, give or take, about 200 cardinals, and only one pope. But how many priests are there in the world? There's only one answer to that. There is only one priest. Jesus Christ is the only priest. He's the only one who brings about a union between God and man by means of sacrifice. And if anybody else anywhere acts as a priest, it's because of their union with him, whether it's your priest saying Mass on Sunday, or whether it's this thing I'm trying to describe to you, the priesthood of the baptized. Now understand, because you're baptized, you have a union with Christ. Because of that union with Christ, you can make spiritual gifts and offerings, all these things that are happening to your life. When you prayerfully accept them, you make a tremendous spiritual difference. You can help people who won't pray for themselves. You can help wayward family members who, they're going down the wrong path and no one's there to help them. Your prayers and your sacrifices matter. You can pray for yourself. You can offer up these sacrifices for your own wayward soul. I love this quote from St. Therese. You can mull over it again and again and never get to the bottom of it. "My whole strength lies in prayer and sacrifice. These are my invincible arms. They move hearts far better than words. I know it by experience." God still calls. And what good happens when people cooperate? Look what happened because these middle-of-the-road, mediocre apostles just cooperated with the Lord. And what good might we do if we cooperate with the Lord as well? Jesus says, the harvest is abundant, but the laborers are few. I beg you, please be one of the laborers. Please listen for him when he calls. That's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts.